Good evening, Council. Good evening, everybody else that is here this evening, too. This evening is the regular business meeting for the Monroe City Council for January 10th, 2017. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Smith, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Hanford, Rasmussen, Davis, Kemp, and Gable.
Thank you.
We
had received word that Councilmember Cuddeback would not be here this evening, and we will note for the record when Councilmember Davis is here. So without objection, we'll consider her absence as being excused. All right, seeing none, I'd like everybody to please stand and join me in the allegiance. Thank you.
I pledge my allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we begin with the regular agenda, I'm going to ask Council to allow me to add a special order of the day to begin just before the State Auditor's Office presentation. Is that acceptable to Council?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. For the last couple of years, I've had the pleasure of working or having been interviewed by Chris Hendrickson. She has served our community, the whole Sky Valley, and also Monroe extremely well. She has done an excellent job of interviewing me on a number of occasions and has done a number of really wonderful articles. I understand that she is no longer going to be doing work for the Monroe Monitor, and it is a rare thing, but because of the dedication that she has given to our community, because of her sort of having the key to our heart, I figured it was appropriate to award her today with a key to our city. And so I'd like Ms. Hendrickson to please come forward to accept the key to the city of Monroe. Council, will you please stand up? I want to note here that it's a gold key, that there is a bear path, and our heart. So this can actually be worn around your neck. I'm having visions now of Star Wars. Thank you very much for your service.
There, look at us.
Thank you. Councilmembers, if you'd like to take the opportunity right now to say any words, please go ahead. Councilmember Hanson.
Thank you. Yes. Chris, we so appreciate you. You're an incredible athlete. You have been an incredible asset to our community. But the greatest thing that I think looking forward is that it wasn't because of the monitor. It was because of you and what you did for the monitor and for our town. So I'm so excited about your future, because whatever company you put your talents to is just going to flourish, just like in the monitor. So I'm so excited for your future. If you need any recommendations, I stamp everything I can for you. So excited for your future.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah, certainly echo a lot of that, and just add on that, Chris, your writings, your involvement, I mean, you just have such a unique personality to it that just, you know, it becomes one of its own, and whether it's counsel or even me as a, in my professional world, some of the writings and the stories you've told about us up here, our community, our neighbors, you know, they shed a whole different light on who we are, and you know, just the way that you do it, and what you've said, and you're not just writing the stories, but you're getting involved with them too, and I think that's one thing that oftentimes gets missed, and you step in and prove that. And so I know from up here it seems like that you are part of the team, and every single Tuesday you're here. So you know, I said it to you before, but you know, wherever you go, I hope that you don't lose that passion for our community, not just Monroe, but the whole Sky Valley, and you know, you continue and embrace it, and whatever we can do. So, thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I've got to point out just two things. First, I have to share the story. When I had you convinced that you were calling your elected officials dude, and the shock in your voice, and no, you never did. The other thing I just wanted to share, and Chris, you for this. I spoke with Polly Carey, former reporter at The Monitor. She was the editor, too, wasn't she, or something like that. She got Chris involved in the Monroe Monitor a few years ago. And I had an opportunity to talk to her, and she told me that of anyone she has brought into reported in journalism, that Chris was the one with the most gift, and she was really impressed with her progress. You've done an incredible job. I've noticed in the paper, your articles have been easy to read and informative. So I just want to say thanks. I hope in the future we're still going to see you, but it's been a great ride, and I hope it continues for you.
Councilmember Scarborough.
Chris, I wanted to, as I said, thank you for your honesty and your articles. When you interviewed me and what you wrote, and appreciate the candor and everything you did. I've always appreciated your articles because I think they're like, I can only echo what's been said. They're all the same words we all do. I hope you best luck in the future.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
You know, I just think in today's age, you know, and the way that we consume facts and different things, and stuff happens in the community, you have elections, you have all that kind of stuff. There's so many different forms of information, social media, good old-fashioned grapevine, and data that's out there, and people are very, it's hard to trust because there's the hashtag fake news and all that kind of stuff, and people have their own political agendas. It's hard for us to trust. I mean, I've done, from the standpoint of, you know, going into a forum or a candidate forum, and then I read the paper the next day, and I go, you know, I'm pretty sure I was there yesterday, because that didn't look like anything I said. And I can honestly say, you know, over the last however many years, it's, you know, been what I grew to see, and I think is apparent with just the response, is that a lot of times people would wait for Chris to write the story. You know, there was the voice. All right, I've heard this side, and you talk about fair. I mean, that really is what I came to appreciate and trusted. You know, you were going to ask the hard questions. You know, you'd come up to me and say, you know, I got to ask. Yeah, I know. But it was always going to be, you know, you were just going to, you know, tell it how it was. There was no plan, and I really appreciated that, and I think the community appreciated it. I know they did. And it's just a real talent, you know, you're able to get the story, you know, do it in a way where, you know everybody's dog's name.
Literally.
And it's, you know, it's a real gift. And I will just echo what, you know, Kevin said, Councilmember Hanford, that when one door closes, the other one's opens. And, you know, my family, we've been on several of these journeys in life, and it always opened, you know, more opportunities around the corner. And all of the success that you've had over the last several years, you don't lose any of that, and you don't lose any of us. So thank you for the last several years, and I look forward to what's next. Hashtag what's next.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. And Chris, a sincere and heartfelt thank you from our community. Back on to business. Please let the record show that Councilmember Davis entered chambers at 7:08. Welcome. And we're going to go ahead and continue on with announcements and presentations. Item number one, this is the State Auditor's Office exit conference. Will the State Auditor's Office please come forward?
Well, good evening, everyone. I have to say that that's a tough act to follow. We don't have a key to present to you today, but we do have some really great audit results, and so we're very excited to be here tonight. We are going to get started by passing out draft packets of the documents that we'll be presenting from today. And while those are going around, we want to first do some quick introductions. So tonight we are here to present the results of both the City of Monroe's 2015 audit and also the Monroe Transportation Benefit District's first audit, which will cover the period of 2012 when it was incepted through the end of 2015. My name is Christina Baylor, and I'm the audit manager for the Everett Division of the Washington State Auditor's Office. I've had the pleasure of working with the city for a number of years, both previously as an auditor on site and now in my current capacity as reviewing work for the team. With me today, we have Sarah Superville, who is the lead auditor of the City of Monroe's audit. Sarah also assisted with the last year's audit of the city. And then also Anthony Squires, who is the lead auditor of the Monroe Transportation Benefit District. So if everyone's ready, we'll go ahead and get started and walk you through the draft documents. We'd like to remind you that these are drafts, so by no means they are final. So if you see anything that still needs to be revisited, please let us know, and we certainly can have those discussions. Once they become published on our website, that's when we consider them to be final. So if you open up your packet, you'll see that we have a number of documents that we'll walk you through. On the left-hand side, we have the agenda for both the city's audit and the TBD's audit. For ease, we're going to go through the city's results first, and then we'll transition into the Transportation Benefit District's audit. Looking at the agenda, you'll see our contact information is listed on the left-hand side all the way up to our newly elected state auditor, which will happen tomorrow. So if at any time you have any questions or anything like that, we are all accessible to the city at any level. On the right, you'll see some information about our office. I think everyone's pretty familiar with the state auditor's office, but what we like to highlight when we come out and have the chance to speak with the elected officials is really the state auditor's office is our vision is for governments that work better. And how we help you achieve that is we really want to partner with you to share resources and share different items that will help you in making the decisions that you need to do when carrying out the operations of a city. So we really look forward to working with the city every year and really having those conversations while we're on site with city staff so that they can share information on what you're doing, but also hopefully we can impart some information that might help them in their day-to-day operations. So going down, you'll see the scope of the city's audit that we're here to share the results on cover two main focuses or two separate audits. The first is an accountability audit. The purpose of an accountability audit is really to take a look at the city's compliance, state laws, regulations, contracts, and agreements, as well as your own policies and procedures that you adopt. And then also, just in general, safeguarding of public funds. Are there adequate controls to make sure that public funds are appropriately tracked and monitored so you don't have potential loss of those funds? We also performed a financial statement audit for the 2015 year, and the purpose of that audit is to really look at those financial statements and express an opinion as to whether the financial information is fairly stated, and so we'll share the results of that one as well. But before we walk you through the results of those, each of those audits, we'd like to kind of share some highlights after performing the work with the city's audit, and so I'm going to turn it over to Sarah, who is the lead auditor, so she can share those highlights with you.
Thank you, Christina. So I really want to bring to your attention, I really appreciated how accessible the city staff were in regards to the audit process. It really made the whole audit process go really smoothly and really streamlined. So I would like to thank Diane Nelson, Sherry Hurst, and as well as Rose Howard in finance for really getting those audit requests done timely and really helping streamline this audit process as well. I also really want to thank Diane as well for compiling the financial statement binder. That really helped get the financial statement audit just as done as quickly as possible. Really helped to have all the financial statements and supporting documentation together and really get that process streamlined as well. And also audit staff were very receptive to our audit recommendations as well. So I really appreciate that. So I'll hand it over to Christina to go over.
Thank you, sir. Okay, so what we're going to do next is we're going to set that agenda off to the side and we're going to move over to some draft copies of the report. The agenda is not going to be published on our website, only the reports. And so what we're going to walk you through next is what the public will see when they venture out to our website once the reports are published. The first packet with the yellow cover is the accountability report for the City of Monroe. So you'll see on the front page that this is for the period of January 1st, 2015 through the end of the year. If you turn to the second page, you'll see that this is really just an introductory letter from our state auditor. And the meat of the report is really going to get started on page 4. So page 4 is a summary of the audit that we performed. And what we'd like to draw everyone's attention to is really the results and brief section. So this is really the main conclusion from the audit. And here you'll see in most areas we audited, the city operations complied with applicable requirements and provided adequate safeguarding of public funds. That's really what you want to see. We also found that the city complied with state laws and regulations and your own policies and procedures. So that's overall a very good result. We did note two areas that we'll be discussing with the city tonight in what we call a management letter item. And so we'll go over those shortly. Those areas have to they deal with safeguarding of assets here at the city and then also the police department and mainly the evidence room within the police department. So moving on down the line, a little bit more about the audit. We already spoke about the audit period. And just to kind of remind everyone, management at the city is responsible for ensuring compliance and adequate safeguarding of public funds. And then our audit is designed to perform procedures to determine if those objectives are being achieved. In keeping with those practices, we don't have time to examine every transaction that occurs during 2015. That would be quite a lot of work. So we do need to use a risk-based audit approach and do a number of planning procedures where we select areas that we would like to review in further detail. And you'll see bulleted at the bottom of the page the areas that were examined in further detail. Are there any questions on the areas that were the focus of our audit?
Council members, any questions? Please continue.
Okay. So turning on to the next page, this page 5, is really just referencing any related reports that will be issued within the same time frame. And in this case, we do have a separate report on the financial audit that we'll be walking through separately, so this is really just a reference to that report. On page 6, this is information that we present that is really about your city. So we ask the council and the mayor to take a moment to review this information and make sure that it looks accurate. If there's anything that you think that you would like us to revisit, please let us know because, again, this is really information about your city. And then the last page is really just information about our office. So this is a very high level of the accountability report. Again, this is the document that will be published on the website, so no major concerns. In our review, overall, the city was in compliance with state laws, regulations, your own policies and procedures, and had adequate safeguarding and public funds, so that is a very good result. What we're going to do next is we're going to walk you through the management letter, which is the next document in your packet. The management letter is not included in the report. It's not published on our website. The only reference was that one sentence that we spoke of just a moment ago. So what I'll do is I'll turn it back over to Sarah, and she'll walk you through the management letter.
Thank you, Christina. Okay, so if I can have everyone go to the management letter document. So this face cover letter is just kind of saying that, you know, that we are issuing two management letters and that we will be reviewing these going forward in the next accountability audit, just to follow up on the status of that as well. So if I can have everyone turn to the next page, I'll go over the first management letter, and this is over safeguarding of assets. Part of the reason that we evaluated safeguarding assets, which is to kind of look at the process and controls over ensuring that, you know, there's adequate controls to make sure that city assets are, there's adequate monitoring over that to make sure that misappropriation, theft, or misuse doesn't occur. So part of our audit for the safeguarding of assets of the city, we reviewed small attractive assets, military surplus assets, and fixed assets as well. Just to kind of keep it consistent with the letter, I'll start off with small attractive assets. So based on city policy, we understand that departments are responsible for monitoring and safeguarding small attractive assets. And part of our review of the eight departments, we did note a couple instances that I wanted to bring to your attention, and this is documented below. So examples of this was that we identified that there were six departments that did not adequately segregate duties to ensure that more than one person was making purchases, as well as making additions and deletions to the asset listing, as well as conducting inventory. Another example was there were two departments that did not maintain their own small and attractive asset listing as required by policy. And then another example further down is part of our military surplus review. We did note that the police department did have adequate controls to monitor and the military surplus assets and to ensure that they were in accordance with state law. However, this was based on threshold amounts, we noted that this wasn't making it to the small and attractive asset listing, and the finance department was actually unaware that the department had a hold of these assets. So that's part of where the recommendation is coming with that. So without adequate internal controls, there's a potential heightened risk that these assets aren't being properly tracked, and then that misappropriation, theft, or misuse may occur. Going to the next page, over fixed assets. So based on our review, we determined that the city does have adequate controls in place to monitor fixed assets as well. But we did notice one instance where there was a license plate number that was listed on the asset listing that was duplicate, and you can't have duplicate license plate numbers. So we just want to make sure that, you know, the city adequately has the correct license plate number to make sure these are properly being tracked as well. Additionally, we noted a couple items regarding the asset tracking policy. There was just a small inconsistency in the amounts disclosed in the policy, where fixed assets is has a threshold of $5,000 or more. But in the discussion where there's the inventory part in the asset tracking policy, we noted that it listed $45,000. So the inconsistency could be slightly misleading. And we also noted that the city does not have a formal policy over surplus assets, and so without that, there might not be consistent procedures that the city is following to make sure that misappropriation does not occur as well. So further down on the page, we did issue a couple recommendations to improve the internal controls and to ensure compliance with city policies. So one of them being to adequately segregate duties among employees to make sure that not one person is responsible for making purchases, making additions and deletions to the asset listing, as well as conducting the inventory. The next recommendation is to ensure compliance with city policies, making sure departments are maintaining their own asset listing, and making sure that all required assets are making it to the asset listing based on city policy. The next one is to ensure all assets included on the asset listing are being properly monitored to make sure that they can be readily located, as well as ensuring that there's supporting documentation for assets that are checked out to city employees as well. Next recommendation is for the fixed assets to make sure that the correct license plate numbers are included based on city vehicles. The next one is to update the fixed asset policy to ensure that it's a threshold amount, and then also to develop and adopt a formal policy over surplus assets to make sure that the city is following consistent procedures in regards to that. Does anyone have any questions with this management letter?
Council? I see none.
Okay. So I can have everyone turn to the next page. I'll go over the second management letter. This one is over the police evidence room. This is an area that we've been looking at with a lot of cities in the county, based on the fact that the city has implemented a new software system called New World, and that is a widely used evidence tracking software amongst the entire county. So that's kind of why we selected this area to audit. So we did review the internal controls over the police evidence room, and I just wanted to bring a couple things that we identified to your attention. We noted that there was no system to transfer or monitor the transfer of evidence from the temporary locker area to the actual evidence room. And so with that, there's a heightened risk that there might be some misappropriation or theft during that transfer. We've noted that in August of 2014, the department discontinued the use of their previous evidence tracking software. And then in October of 2015, the department has implemented New World, which is their new evidence tracking software. During that time period, the department was only maintaining paper records. And so there was also not a master listing to show all the evidence that was booked in the evidence room during that time period. And so from an audit standpoint, we weren't able to verify if all the paper records that were provided were complete with all evidence booked in the evidence room. The next one goes over the evidence manual, where it discusses that a complete audit is required whenever there's turnover in employees. However, the manual doesn't define who would be responsible for the audit. And then we did note that there were spot check audits that are being conducted. However, without a complete inventory being performed, there's always that heightened risk that there might be some missing inventory, especially if the inventories are being conducted only when there's complete turnover in someone in the evidence room. The next one, so there's a weakness that we identified based on other audits we've conducted throughout the county. Over the New World system, when it comes to deletions in the software, where it doesn't document the reasoning for any deletions or adjustments that are being made in the software. And so we noted that the department was unaware about this, and so they don't have a process in place to monitor and kind of document externally from the New World system the reason for the deletions. And so with that, there's always the heightened risk that there might be some unauthorized deletions or adjustments that are being made in the system. Additionally, with the evidence room, there's required quarterly reports that need to be submitted to the state treasurer in regards to forfeiture and seizures. We did note that for most of 2015 and part of 2016, the department did not submit these, and so they are not in compliance with state law in regards to that matter. So below, you'll see a couple recommendations that we have issued in regards to this matter. So the first one being implement a system to monitor evidence being transferred from the temporary lockers to the evidence room, to establish a master listing of all evidence booked into the evidence room to ensure that these are properly being monitored. And if you go to the next page, we recommend to revise the current evidence manual to define how often and by whom inventory is being conducted by. The next bullet point is to establish and maintain documentation for reasons being made, deletions being made in the New World system, and also to ensure compliance with state law by submitting required quarterly reports to the state treasurer. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
One question I had on bullet three there under the police evidence room, and I noticed again in the wrong recommend side, it's the same as reasonable basis on the full inventory. Everybody's definition of reasonable basis is a lot different.
So just to the reasonable basis is because it really is a management decision on what you determine as reasonable. But in terms of if you don't experience turnover in the department, you could go a very long time without conducting a full inventory. And so the longer you go without conducting a full inventory, the more at risk that, you know, errors in the inventory system can go undetected, and the longer they're undetected, you might not know the reason why when you get around to doing the inventory. So what we're pointing out here is basing the time frame of doing an inventory based on turnover, that might put you at a very long time versus every 2 to 3 years or something of that nature. The turnover driver is what could make it elongated more than what you would like.
Is it a percent on the turnover or just one person?
It's however you frame your policy, but typically we would like to see inventories performed annually, which is the best practice. Similar to the safeguarding of assets, federal regulations will say inventory should not exceed over 2 years. So 2 years under federal regulations is kind of what they define. But really, it is a management decision, so it's up to you. We're just pointing out that you could potentially go over a really long time if it's based on turnover only.
Okay. And then the only thing I noticed is right under that, I'm assuming it's a grammatical error. It just says not.
I'm sorry, where was that?
So it says may not be detected timely, period, not.
Oh, yes. That was a good catch. That's correct.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Council? All right, next one.
Okay, so next we are going to walk you through the financial statement audit report, which is the next report in your document, in your packet. And that report has a blue cover. Okay. So we can have everyone turn to page 4. So the financial statement report consists of two parts. One part is over internal controls over the preparation of the financial statements, as well as providing an independent auditor's report where we issue an opinion on the financial statements. So the first part on page 4 goes over the internal controls of the financial statements. Basically what we do for that is to audit the financial statement preparation and kind of getting an understanding of how that's done. So if you turn to page 5, kind of made it easy for everybody that we highlighted the important parts of the report. So based on our understanding and review of the city's internal controls over financial statements, we did not identify any deficiencies in internal controls that we would consider major issues. So that's really good. The next paragraph kind of goes over the city's compliance with auditing standards in regards to internal controls. And again, we kind of made it easy for the highlighted part. The results of our test disclosed no instances of non-compliance or other matters that are required to be reported under the government auditing standards. So that's also really good as well. Anybody have any questions in regards to the internal control aspect of the financial aid report?
Council? Mr. Moses?
Just want to be clear on one of the issues here, and that's related to the use of the state statute in preparing our financial statements and the state auditor's budgeting and accounting and reporting system, the BAR system. And your finding is that we should have used the GAAP system. Understanding this correctly.
Yeah, that's a very good question. A question that's been rose a lot over the past year. So we actually plan to address that in the next section. So you're ahead of us. So that's really great. To go on to the next report, we can kind of explain this in conjunction with that report. The second piece of this report is really the meat of the report. This is where we issue the city the opinion on the financial statements. And so you'll see this under the heading Independent Auditor's Report on Financial Statements. The opinion is really what matters to the city, because that is what you would use, or bond rating companies would use when they were to provide a bond rating if you were to go out for bonds. So it's very important. An unmodified opinion is what you want to receive. That's a good, clean audit opinion. And the city prepares your financial statements in accordance with the BARS manual, which is authorized by the state of Washington.
It's battery insurance. Okay, we're back on.
Okay, great. So you'll see that in the middle of page 8, you did receive the unmodified opinion in accordance with the regulatory basis of accounting, the BARS manual, which is authorized under state law. The last paragraph in that section talks about the basis for issuing a second opinion, which is an adverse opinion in accordance with U.S. GAAP. So the American Institute Certified Public Accountants, they do set standards that apply to all audits of government agencies across the nation, and they require auditors to adhere to those and report whenever a government chooses to report under a different method other than GAAP. GAAP is full accrual accounting. It requires a significant investment of time and energy by staff, and in some cases doubles your accounting staff to be able to keep up with the ever-changing statements. It's completely a management decision on what basis of accounting that you choose to do. We see a lot of cities in the $20 to $30 million range stay cash basis, and typically you see the tipping point when you go over $30 million in annual revenue. Some cities start to choose to go to GAAP. But that is ultimately a management decision. It's not, there's no threshold that requires you to report under any method. It's really your choice. We don't advocate for one way or another, but if you choose to stay under cash, we just have to comply with auditing standards by also noting that in the report and issuing an adverse opinion with GAAP. The unmodified opinion is the most important part of the report, and that has been vetted through bond rating companies, and they are completely fine with it, so there is no negative impact to the city. I think if you look at the number of GAAP audits we do, there's about over 1,800 government agencies in the state of Washington, and less than 200 use full accrual accounting. So it's a pretty small percentage. Are there any questions on that?
Good question.
Okay. So continuing on page 9, we just have one final section to talk about the supplementary and other information. So I'll let Sarah finish off.
So the supplementary information that we did audit in regards to the city is called the Schedule of Liabilities, or the Schedule of Nine. Basically, this is where the city discloses any long-term debt, such as compensated absences or any pension liabilities related to GASB 68 as well. In regards to that, we will also be issuing an unmodified opinion on the supplemental information as well. So, related. I can have everyone turn to page 11. This is where we will be including the city's financial statements, notes, and any supplemental information as well. Just due to timing, we have not included this, but this will be in the final report that we'll be issuing as well. Does anyone have any questions over the financial report?
Council? None?
So hand it over to
Okay, there is one final document regarding the city's audit that's behind the report, and this is a copy of the management representation letter that was signed by the city staff. In accordance with auditing standards, we're required to present you with a copy just so that you're aware of what management is representing during the audit. So it's very standard in an audit process. This is just a copy that we're providing to you. And then moving on, we're going to transition to the TBD audit next, or the Transportation Benefit District. Is there any questions on the city results before we transition to the second audit?
Nope.
Okay, great. So we do have a second set of audit results to present to you. So the Monroe Transportation Benefit District is a separate legal entity, so it requires a separate audit under the state of Washington. This is a very small agency, so we don't do it on the same time frame as the city. The city receives an annual audit. The Transportation Benefit District is about every 3 years. So this is the first audit of the Transportation Benefit District since its inception in 2012. And if it continues to be a separate legal entity, it will continue to receive a separate audit. For the Transportation Benefit District, we only provided an accountability audit, but that's because that's the only thing that's required under our policies. Certainly, the city can choose to have a financial or an accountability audit. For the first round, we did an accountability audit for you. So I'm going to turn it over to Anthony. He's going to walk you through the Transportation Benefit District's report, which is the yellow copied report.
Thank you. All right, so first, it's the yellow report. I don't know if you said that. So if you'll open it up, first page right there, it's going to look a lot like the city's report for the accountability as well. A lot of the same kind of language in there. Go ahead and go on to page 4. And the place we like to highlight, just like as before, is the results in brief there, where it's just saying that in the areas we audited, the district operations complied with applicable requirements and provided adequate safeguarding of public resources. That's a good result. That's what you want to see. And that the district also complied with state laws and regulations and its own policies and procedures in the areas we examined. So overall, good report there. As Christina mentioned, then down a little bit further in the About Block section, it mentions the time frame of the audit, which is different than the time frame of the city. It also goes over the management and our responsibilities for the audit. And then finally, it talks about just how we do base our auditing on a risk basis, and it talks about the areas that we examine during the audit. Any questions on that, specifically maybe the areas that we audit for the Transportation Benefit District?
No.
Thank you. So if we turn to page 5, that shows the information about the district. Same kind of thing there. We do ask that you just spend a little bit of time there checking that over, because that is going to be published in the report, and that's basically just showing what the district is about. So if there's anything in there that you think shouldn't be in there or could be changed, just let us know. And that's basically the report in a nutshell. Any questions?
There are any questions?
Okay. So we just have a few concluding remarks on both audits to share with you, and we'll wrap up our presentation. In addition to the recommendations that Sarah already provided for the city, we did have a couple minor housekeeping items that we shared with management. Those are available if you'd like us to share those with you. We typically share those with management because they're so small and very normal during the audit process. Regarding the city's audit, since we did do a financial statement audit, auditing standards do require that we also let you know of two additional things: whether or not there were any uncorrected misstatements still at the end of our audit. There are no uncorrected misstatements in your financials, so any misstatements that were identified were corrected during the audit. And also, we were required to let you know if there was any large or material misstatements that were corrected during the audit. There were none of those. We would have a different discussion if there were some of those. And then in conclusion, we do expect to issue both the TBD and the city's reports in the next 1 to 2 weeks. So if you see anything that you would like to revisit or have additional discussion, please let us know, because we're happy to do so. And then at the start of this engagement, we did provide an estimate for the audit cost. All audit costs were right on track, so there was no deviations from that. So we're happy to report that. And then regarding your next scheduled audit, so the city is performed on an annual basis. We have been informed that for the 2016 reporting year, you will also require a federal audit, because you expended over $750,000 in federal funds. So this coming around, you'll have 3 audits that have to be completed by the end of September to comply with federal standards. So we'll be out a little bit sooner, not too much longer, so we'll just be back to see you soon. And then the TBD, that is on a 3-year schedule. So your next audit of that will be 16, 17, and 18, likely to occur sometime in 20. So unless the city decides to absorb the TBD into its own operation. And so with that, we will also be providing a customer service survey to all of those that participated during the audit. Any feedback that you can provide for our staff, we want to make sure that we continue to meet the needs of the city and are always looking for ways to improve. So with that, I think that's everything that we have to share with you tonight. Is there any questions we can answer before we wrap up our presentation?
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
No questions, but I just wanted to let the record show that when you announced the date of September 2017, Diane's smile was here.
It still is.
<We'll be here. laughs>
Congratulations, Diane.
Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Nicely presented. Great. The next item that we have on the agenda this evening is AB 17-001, confirmation for the finance director appointment. And Mr. Worthen's going to come up and have a couple remarks.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Mayor Thomas is going to ask for your confirmation here in a moment, but I wanted to take a minute and explain. We're in a unique situation. We don't often get to have a transition period with our department heads. Before you tonight is the ability to do that. Diane's going to retire at the end of April. Becky Hazard is going to hopefully come on no later than February 6th, so we'll have a transition period. With that, the question came up with our attorney, Mr. Lowe. Who's responsible for the finances between February 1st and April 30th when you essentially have 2 finance directors in place? And after drawing the short straw, we said Ms. Nelson is going to be, she will be the liable party until she exits at April 30th. So the title for the confirmation tonight is not finance director, it's finance director in waiting. And that is per our city attorney, he is not here tonight. He crafted that himself. I am just the messenger, counsel, so that is what we've come up with. So, and then on May 1st, Becky would become the finance director. So, and it has, and only, it's strictly related to the liability. Who's responsible for the budget between why we have two financial department heads here? Questions at all? Of course, back then.
That's what we're getting. No questions, but just with a title like that, I want to make the motion. I move to confirm the appointment of Ms. Rebecca Hassert as finance director in waiting, effective May 1st, 2017.
Second. Point of order.
Yeah, it's the motion is to confirm the appointment of Ms. Rebecca Hassert as finance director effective May 1st. In waiting doesn't need to be part of the motion. It's just letting you know that that is her title up until that time.
That I amend the motion. They removed the waiting part for the salary selection.
Second.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second, and I understand the motion, please correct me if I'm wrong, to be as written in the agenda bill, which is to confirm the appointment of Ms. Rebecca Hassert as finance director effective May 1st, 2017.
To the date. That's
correct. Yeah, okay.
All right. Ms. Hassert, can you please come forward? I was very pleased to have the opportunity to meet the four candidates that we had, and we had four excellent candidates. Ms. Hassert, I felt, was the best fit for our city. She came back for a second interview. We had her interviewed by the staff that she would be managing. Also by the directors, and then also by me, so that she had an opportunity to interact with all levels of staff. And I really appreciated, I really appreciate what she has to bring to our city, and really look forward to her working as our finance director. Ms. Hassert, would I say a few words?
Sure. I'm actually really excited for this opportunity, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed this goes well tonight. I did, as an aside, want to mention that I have had the privilege to work with Zach in the past in one of my consulting roles, so I'm surprised that he didn't come up with the title of Encounter on Deck. Especially since he's not here to defend himself. Anyhow, yes, I've been really excited. Everything I've been learning about the city just makes me more and more excited by this opportunity. Everyone here has been real welcoming, and they've already made me feel part of the team, and I haven't even started yet. So look forward to working here at the city. Look forward to becoming part of the community. As some know here, I am relocating here to Monroe with this opportunity. So, yeah, I'm jumping in with both feet. So.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Ms. Hassert? Okay. We have a motion on the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Welcome to the city of Monroe.
Thank you.
Will now administer your oath of office. So if you raise your right hand, I will go ahead and read it for you, and then you can choose to swear or affirm. Rebecca Hazard, you do solemnly swear or affirm that you will support the Constitution and laws of the United States and the State of Washington and ordinances of the City of Monroe, and that you will faithfully and impartially perform and discharge the duties of Finance Director according to law and to the best of your ability and understanding.
I do solemnly swear.
Alright, the next item that we have on our agenda this evening is also under announcements and presentations. This is the AB 17002, Confirmation Interim Community Development Director. And as you are aware, we had sent an email. Mr. Osaki tendered his resignation with the City of Monroe effective January 6th of 2017. We're really going to miss having him here. He's done an excellent job for our city, for our community. And we began the process of looking for a new community development director. last Friday or Tuesday, somewhere in there, and we are actively looking for somebody to fill that role. In the meantime, we are in need of appointing somebody to an interim position. Brad has the best experience to be able to understand and interpret our code, and so I am asking for your confirmation of my appointment to the interim community development director as being Mr. Feilberg. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and make a motion to move to confirm the appointment of Mr. Brad Feilberg as interim community development director.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford to move to confirm the appointment of Mr. Brad Feilberg as interim community development director. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much, everybody, and we'll keep you posted on how things are going with the hiring process, and we'll also update you at the end of the meeting on some other developments in terms of recruiting for positions in community development. Great. The next item that we have on the agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for the members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. Public testimony, public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker. The first person that we have who has signed up to speak this evening is Ms. Chris Hendrickson. Ms. Hendrickson.
So I signed up before I knew all that stuff was going to happen. So the first part of my speech doesn't work anymore. I only wrote like 3 pages, so it's going to be a lot off the cuff. But I really felt compelled to come and speak to you guys because of how much being able to be a part of these meetings has meant to me. It's been over 3 years now, I guess. And so obviously you've all heard that I'm no longer with the Monroe Monitor, and it's still very shocking to me that this happened, and it's heartbreaking, and I'm honestly, you know, angry and crushed. It really hurts what happened. I loved my job. I think everybody knows that much. I love my job. And so it's pretty strange. But I just wanted to say thank you to everybody here, and I'll try not to ramble on for too long. But I started coming to these meetings in May of 2013, and I was terrified. There was different council members. Some of you are still here, but there were different council members, and I didn't know anybody. And I walked through the doors, and I had no idea what to expect. And nobody was familiar, and I was completely out of my element. And I saw the chief, and that made me feel okay because he was familiar. I was covering Byron Scherf at Snohomish County Courthouse. So he was a familiar face, and so I really was, that made me feel, okay, I was like, okay, I know that man, I know who he is, and it made me feel like everything was going to be okay. And then the meeting happened, and I was baffled. I did not know what a first was, I did not know what a second was, I didn't know what an agenda was. And property taxes were just insane. And literally, Polly had to translate the entire thing to me later because I didn't know what anything meant. But I loved it. I love learning new things. And the thing that really struck me quickly, well, one of the first issues, actually, that really, really struck me was it would have been November of 2013, and it was school impact mitigation fees. And I sat out here, and I listened to Tom Williams talk about, because the discount, they wanted there to be a bigger discount on these school impact mitigation fees to make things better for developers. And I sat there, and I listened to Tom, and I was like, that guy's a genius. I was on fire for developers. I was like, that guy, he is right. They need to make this discount huge. This is, yes. And then the meeting got over, and I was like, well, wait, what is a school impact mitigation fee? I had no idea. So, and for some reason that year, it was the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, because I had no idea what they were, and I knew I had to write the story, And somehow I got hooked up with Nancy Truett Pierce. And she invited me to come the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and she explained what school impact mitigation fees are to me. And so I'm sitting there in her office listening to her talk about what those fees do, and I'm on fire for schools. Now I'm like, schools, yes, no discounts. They need all the money from school. And that is when I realized how hard your job is. You guys have to listen to that information and make those decisions. And it really, really hit home how, and I know how much you make. Very much. And back then it was less. So I just had such a huge respect for what you guys do. And, you know, and those issues, they keep coming up, and I love being able to learn about both sides. December of 2013 was the first time I ever had East Monroe, and nobody would talk to me. Everybody hated me, East Monroe. Lowell hated me. Pastor Minnick hated me. No, and I thought, how did my newspaper alienate both sides of this issue? One side should like me. But I won them both over, and I heard both of their sides, and I felt for both of their sides. I still do. And it's another hard decision that you guys have to, you know, people are really quick to blame. You guys work so hard, and I just really have to tell you how much I respect every single one of you for what you do. And I really am grateful for the fact that you've let me sit back there every week. I think I can count on one hand how many council meetings I've missed, because I love to come. Even when sometimes I don't even write about it, I just come. And really, this is, I don't even have words to say how much this means to me. I really don't. And I don't want to cry and get emotional, because I'm still in shock, and I feel if I get emotional, I might just completely lose it. But this, you know, many of you know about my past struggles in life, and this has been a really hard thing for me, because I don't deal well with change, I don't deal well with adversity, and I feel wronged and hurt and in pain, and my habit is always to find a way to make those feelings go away. And but this is something tangible that I can hold on to. Like, really, it gives me so much strength. Just to, you know, it's weird. But this job somehow has just become intrinsically tied with my sobriety, and I don't know, that's probably not a good thing, but it is what it is. And so I'm hoping I can find a way to still serve this community, because I do look at my job as service, and I love it, and I love you all, and thank you for letting me ramble on for way too long.
There's nobody else. Thank you, Chris. Nobody else has signed up to speak. Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Anybody at all? Okay. Thank you. We're going to go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Council members, please note that on your printed copy that I am requesting that the consent agenda be approved for items 1, 3, and 4, not for item number 2. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to approve the consent agenda items number 1, 3, and 4.
Second. So first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to approve consent agenda items 1, 3, and 4. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. The next item on the agenda this evening is under unfinished business, item number 1, this is AB 17004, discussion 191st Street extension, options and pros and cons. The presenter this evening will be Scott Peterson. Mr. Peterson, thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Council, and Happy New Year. First time I can say that. And safe travels on the way home, too. Tonight's agenda bill, as the mayor mentioned, 004, is just a discussion for the 191st extension. I have a little bit of a slideshow for you. My apologies, Mr. Scarborough, but I'm trying to
I do win it every time.
Every time. Every time.
As the junior guy.
Well, things have changed. Okay, my name is Scott Peterson. I'm division manager for the Public Works Design and Construction Division, one of the engineers here. And I just want to start with an overview of this 191st Avenue extension. We were tasked to look at a few different pathways of possibly bringing 191st down the hill, so to speak, to downtown Monroe. I got this sort of overview image just to kind of help orient some of the people that may not know what we're talking about. 191st Avenue is labeled up on top there, and it essentially stems from the city limits on the north and stops at Rainier View Road. In the past, Rainier View, 191st used to go through this green belt, which you may or may not know as the US 2 bypass corridor.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Well, that's the wrong slide. No, anyways, it comes down, it used to come down to the south, and just before Lakeside, it tied into this access road that shows us wrapping around Walmart there. In the past, it's functioning as kind of a local access road, but at some point, it was abandoned, especially when Rainier View Road was constructed. It gave opportunity for potentially more economic development and also the chance of building a new road called, what WashDOT knows as Frontage Road 7, farther bypass plan. But right when those plans were really kicking up dust, the economic recession came by, and that was scrapped. And here we are today, and this is a scenario of that area where most of the most all the residential community up there accesses Chain Link Road and therefore downtown via Rainier View Road. So I will give a brief overview of the four routes that we chose, that we're tasked to look at, and then I'll go into a little more explanation on each one through the presentation. So four potential alignments, we kind of color-coded them to help follow along here. Concept A was pretty much shown in the blue line here, it's a straight shot south following the old 191st alignment back in the day. Concept B starts off heading south and then sort of hooks to the southeast and targets the fairly new roundabout. That is one of our more improved intersections, and there is a fourth leg at the roundabout, unused at this point, so that's where it would tie in. Concept C kind of comes off an existing spur up near that detention pond in the Sinclair Heights development. It's south-southeasterly, wraps around the Seventh-day Adventist Church there and ties into Chain Link Road across from the Mountain Ridge Road. That, coincidentally, is roughly what Frontage Road 7 is supposed to follow. And then Concept D was kind of an economic approach to access, and that was trying to pretty much follow exactly the existing alignment of the two roads in the past. Just keep grading to a minimum and just kind of track ourselves over to the roundabout. We looked at a few different road sections for each of the alignments, with the exception of D, just to kind of give a couple ideas in terms of our analysis and our cost estimation. These are the two road sections we looked at, sticking to the color codes of concept A, B, and C. The one up on top is essentially a standard road section for urban development. You got your lanes of travel, and whether it might be bike lanes or parking strips, curb and gutter, planters, and sidewalks on both sides of the roadway. An alternate section that was thought of was maybe kind of keeping a more rural road section, no curb, creating a separated sort of greenscape between the cars, and then widening out and having one wider shared path for bicyclists and pedestrians on just one side of the road. For concept D, which was a more economical run, we just kind of kept it to a rural road kind of setting, just two lanes of travel for cars and a no-frill sort of road. Just get you where you need to be. So for concept A, again, the straight shot south, it's about 2,000 feet long, maybe a little less, depending on how we can tie into the Galaxy Way.
There is a significant amount of earthwork on this project.
Mr. Peterson.
I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge Councilmember Camp in case it's late for the preceding slide. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Could you back up? I'm just curious.
Sure.
You're going off the roll. Do you have estimates for the traffic, expected traffic in this particular?
I do not have expected traffic flows.
Okay, then that's fine. I'm just curious.
Councilmember Campbell?
Essentially, you would just, I used to live up there, that you would just be restoring it. That's what it was before, it was a rural road.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Councilmember Hanford?
Since we stopped, on this option, currently, correct me if I'm wrong, but currently the straight shot down the hill is used as a path by people. Is that correct?
It, I mean, it is open. You know, it's not reforested or anything.
To walk in that
way. So okay. People have the opportunity to walk through there.
Okay, so if this option was pursued, that would eliminate that whole path?
It wouldn't
even be a path.
They essentially walk on the old road grade, so that road grade would be reestablished as driving lanes. So, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Anything further, Council? Okay, Mr. Peterson.
All right, thank you. Let's see, concept A. As I mentioned, there's quite a bit of earthwork because of the grade elevation changes, particularly right at the north end of Galaxy Way. There's a steep hill waiting for us. But with it following the existing road alignment, there is sensitive areas in that US-2 corridor. By sticking to the old road alignment, chances are that we will have, I don't say minimal, but less impact to sensitive areas that we'd have to mitigate for. Like all these concepts that we looked at, every one of them will involve some sort of WSDOT participation, if you will, because definitely WSDOT has an interest in this area. Our planning level cost estimate ranges from $4.1 to $4.8 million, the less expensive one being the shared path, the alternate road section. So a little bit less expensive than the urban standard road section.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
You brought it up, Doug. Dealing with WSDOT. I thought that was one of the reasons why we vacated that. It was part of bypass. This is the first time we've explored or talked about this. It's on our street plan, all that kind of stuff. Is there a willingness for them to work with us now? Is that what I'm hearing? I mean,
well, that's a good point. So WSDOT is a very large entity, and each entity has their own opinion. So we have been talking to the right-of-way division of WSDOT, and they seem open to providing, reestablishing access through there.
Okay.
That's
further than we were before, so that's all.
That's good. Okay. There might be another, you know,
entity
that says, no, it's mine, I'm a hoarder, you can't touch it. So, I can say it's going to take a lot of negotiation and discussions with them. So.
Okay.
And that's prevalent for all of the lanes we have to cross through the corridor.
So with that part of the conversation, if we did this at the point they did the bypass, would this be negated?
And WSDOT, from what I understand, they always have state trumping law that they want to build that corridor through there, they could remove whatever we construct.
Whatever
corridor.
We do on 191st.
Right.
Councilmember Gamble?
Hence the reason for the front end 7 road is because that design would be long-term thinking, and they go through and they punch it, and they would be able to stay because it's a frontage road.
That's correct. Frontage Road 7, which Concept C locally or closely follows, essentially was trying to follow the WSDOT plans for their future. Now, granted, these plans were drawn up a long time ago, I think late 60s, early 70s.
68.
So they've been thinking about it a long time.
Councilmember Kim?
Thank you. Where on the map is the WSDOT considerations between what looks like that little trail and then the darker trail, the wooded area?
I have a slide later in the presentation that highlights their corridor.
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind waiting. Okay.
Please continue.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Moving on to concept B, this road is 1,000 feet longer, but we don't have
tie it in a higher elevation at the roundabout, so there's going to be less grading involved. Again, there's probably going to be more sensitive area impacts because we deviate off the old road alignment, start entering undeveloped country, so to speak. One of the benefits of this, of course, is it funnels cars to the roundabout, which is a great strategic point for helping people get to an intersection that is improved and drives people to choices of either southbound on Chainlink Road to Lewis and 203, or if they want to head back over towards Kelsey 522. So it's an intersection that would be capable of handling different traffic flows. The planning level cost estimate is a little bit less than concept A. Again, $3.2 million for the shared path alternate road section. And then if we do an urban section, we're projecting about $4.1 million to do that construction. We'll move on to the next slide. Concept C again, maybe also known as Frontage Road 7. I keep saying that. It's somewhere in the middle in terms of length. Again, substantially less earthwork simply because we're tying into the existing road system at a higher elevation. It goes through undeveloped country, so to speak, so we will likely encounter some more wetland areas that would need mitigation for those impacts. It puts vehicles on the Chainlink Road at the Mountain Ridge Road intersection. And then, of course, watchdog coordination prevalent in all of these. And then we're getting a little less expensive in these price options. $2.7 million for the alternate road section style and $3.2 million for their urban section.
Customer Gamble? That also be required. That's private property right there. Residence.
To the east of the alignment.
Required one.
Huh?
What'd you say, required one?
That's a private residence right there that's cutting across the driveway right there. This is right at the top of the north side of the concept scene.
There we, we can work with that alignment, but what I would say is that our alignment might still follow within the state land. The intent is the residential property is adjacent to, but we're not through it.
Okay. Yeah, that looks, we're good at the illustration, we want to make sure.
Right.
All right.
There are a couple single family residentials up north of the church there, and you guys can see where the church is located. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, thanks.
Moving on. Okay, great. Concept D, again, I call this our more simplified road route. It's the longest of the four. It's 3,200 feet long, roughly. The road section is very basic, just a couple travel lanes to get you from point A to point B. A lot less earthwork due to the fact that we're just following the old road alignments and the old road grades. Because we're following the old road grades, there's going to be some steeper hills and sharper corners. So driver comfort, those little issues are prevalent, with this style of get them there, get them quick, no frills road section. But as you can see, the price has dropped so that we think about $1.4 million to build this road.
Three.
Thank you. Because of the steeper grade and sharper corners, is that a reason why the sidewalk or extended bike lanes or parking lanes, like in section one, aren't considered for this concept? Or
it's more of, we were sitting there going, what can we do that would get us to the least expensive route? And that simply is keeping a road prism that roughly mimicked the old road prism.
Okay.
The other sections that you mentioned are much wider, and so they spill out the edges, so you have to build up the road embankment to accommodate that. As you go through the wetland corridor, you're impacting those. You might need a larger structured bridge over a stream because the road section is a lot wider. So we just said, the old road grade is about 20 feet wide, and we're going to put down about a 20 foot wide road. Got it.
Okay.
Any other questions? Councilmember Gibbs.
Scarborough.
So, excuse me. So this one would be impacted when Highway 2 takes their option that's built in their mind in 1968, is whether or not it goes right to the little church, I believe, across up here.
So this one would be affected. They would not be able to kind of overpass over it?
Well, I can't really speak for WashDOT. I mean, the plans were super old from now. But, you know, one option if they were felt it worthy would be to build, as you mentioned, an overpass. Of course, that's a bridge structure to them, and that drives up the cost to develop the corridor. So they also have the right to cut off the road and sort of, you know, hopefully they participate in building frontage road 7 so we don't just cut off our community, so to speak. But they do have the right as a city.
Councilor Campbell?
Yeah, it's just safe to say that under the current design of the bypass, engineered in 1968, the only option that would make it so that it wouldn't that would be C, correct?
That would be true. And we're making the assumption that they're still happy with their
1968, yeah.
Exactly.
Totally got it.
Exactly.
Yep.
Any other questions, Council? Please continue.
So this is the slide that Mr. Camp, you're asking about. The red boundary, the line boundary, kind of represents the WashDOT Highway 2 bypass corridor. There's talk about, you know, you see the church property, you see those single-family residents just north of the church. Concept C was following the red line, so to speak, but staying within the WashDOT corridor, not attempting to impact private properties. But that's WashDOT's area of interest, and as well as what you see is some sort of shaded green and areas and a blue line. That's an approximate representation of sensitive areas out there. I believe, without having done any studies yet, but I believe you can pretty much connect the green shade all the way along the side of and over the blue stream. I believe they're one common entity. So there is a sensitive area that would have to be crossed under all four concepts. Again, this kind of slide talks about challenges. You know, WashDOT, we'd have to work heavily with WashDOT, getting them to buy into whatever we would like to go forward with. As I said before, right-of-way department seems very flexible towards, related to streets and transportation, they seem very flexible towards helping us out. But there might be two or three or four other entities in WashDOT that have a different opinion. So that would have to certainly be explored. Sensitive areas, depending on how we can minimize. The goal is always to minimize sensitive area impacts because mitigation does cost money. We might need to put in a structure, a bridge, or some sort of large box culvert to bridge the stream. But those structures in themselves cost a lot of money. And then, of course, depending on the options, you know, earthwork is definitely a driver. This is a significant driver for option A, which was a straight shot down to Galaxy Way. Let's see, after this presentation, oh, here's a summary of it, so you guys didn't have to try to remember those cost estimates, but all color-coded for ease of reading, I hope. But so you see concept A, straight down, it's kind of the most expensive, and then B, C, and then finally D is being the least expensive. This is pretty much starting near the end of my presentation, so
okay.
I'm sure you have other questions.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So, you know, I'm looking, first of all, it would be interesting to hear at the open house to hear what the neighbors desire. But I'm wondering if you can walk us through each of the four options and how that will affect, like I'm thinking, start with option A. I'm going home from I came 522 into town, and now I'm going option A straight up the hill. And right now, when I drive up there, there's no stop. You just go around the water culvert or whatever, and then just go up the hill. So what kind of impact would that cause? And what are you envisioning at the top of the hill to merge people in? On each of these items, if you could take us through. Like B comes down to the roundabout, that's fine. But C comes down in the middle of Chain Lake Road.
Right.
So could you walk us through what your
thoughts are on those? Some high-level thoughts on this one. You know, A, B, and D all access about the same location up on off of Rainier View Road. Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you get to that little spot, you have 191st, Rainier View. It does its own little jog right there, and then we'd come off with South 191st, so to speak. And so that intersection could potentially be straightened out a little bit for a better traffic flow up there. In terms of which lake would stop, which road would be a pass through, free through, you know, we haven't got to that level. Concept B and D take us over to the roundabout, which is a pretty good functioning intersection. Concept A, it's unknown whether or not it would degrade the intersection of Galaxy Way and Kelsey, because, you know, if everyone's coming down to go to down 522 in the morning, you know, they're all doing right-hand turns, so that's not really a lot of impact. But we're not sure that would stress that intersection of Kelsey and Galaxy using Concept A. It kind of depends on driver behavior, which way most people go in the morning or come home in the evening. Concept C, it gets cars, it kind of splits up cars using Rainier View Road to get on Chain Lake. Now they're coming down and then get on at Mountain Ridge Road. So in one instance, you're spreading the connection points, you know, and so you're not beating, if there's congestion between there and the roundabout, you're not beating that, you know, because you're still pouring people on a Chain Lake Road north of the roundabout. So chances are there could be a need for some improvement where Concept C ties into Chain Lake Road. So we did go down to that road and see what kind of impacts are further downstream. Our objective on this was to see how to get people from that neighborhood to not just have Rainier View as their own choice. Their only choice. There we go. How's that? That works.
And you feel like B and D coming straight down to the roundabout, like the roundabout could handle that?
The roundabout was designed based on forecasted traffic, you know, growth. And the designers, when they came up with that roundabout, made sure that it functioned to a satisfactory level. So.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how this plays out. My personal, I personally like A and D the best myself, but that's just my thoughts.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you. One thing that I would like to see if we can still do it now, just like the Blueberry and North Kelsey that we talked about a few weeks ago, I guess at this point, this is going to be brought to a community meeting. So as you're looking at this, if there's anything that you'd like to see modified, change, what have you, right now is a really good time for us to get that feedback so that we can add that material. For me, one thing I'd like to see is the alternate section cost estimate for Concept D. And one of the reasons for that is that I think that there would be interest in having some sort of walkway. It might not be separated by as much of a swale, but I know that there are people up there that walk on the old 191st asphalt. And I think that it would be valuable to maintain a connection, and it might be in some areas flush up against it or very close to it, but in other areas it, you know, we might have the space to widen it out a little bit more. So also just for apples to apples, it would be nice to see a number in under the alternate section for Concept D. So if staff's able to do that and give an estimate, I'd appreciate that.
So just summarize, who would like to see alternate section run on Concept Road D?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
No problem. Also recognize, council members, that there is not a BMX dirt track down in that area right there, and that is one thing, so that there is. There is a planned track that is within the right-of-way there that people use, and it would be important as we're doing this to be sensitive to that use, and so there may be some areas where we just need to be aware of that. I lost track of who was next. I'm very certain Councilmember Camp was next, and then after that, I'll flip the coin. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. Okay. Something on the. So we're doing a presentation on Thursday, right?
Not this Thursday. That one's for the Blueberry.
Oh, okay.
This one actually, I believe, is January 26th. Oh, we're going to do those now for this.
Right. Okay. So A and D, they're going to have the same grade in terms of from the connection point of the hill, and I'm just trying to visualize how much it would, how much it would be, so it's going to be a steep hill. I'm trying to compare it to next to the fairgrounds coming down the mountain at the same time.
I can't say about Robin Hood, but if we move over to a turning place southeast, that road extension that we did,
yeah,
that's about 12% grade that you'll feel.
So okay.
A would be about the same. D would be a lot steeper, like 16-17%.
D so would be, or A would be?
D would be. And we're just following the original road grade. A, even in order to lessen the grades, we're digging down, we're filling, and thus all that grade work to try and lower the maximum road grades.
So where is that grade that exceeds 12% on the D route, just so that I can...
Well, based on the profile that we did, and also the limitations on that, it's just we're just doing satellite radar. We didn't actually survey the property.
Okay.
So, you know, it was, if I recall, it was actually north of the wetland corridor, closer
yeah,
to the top.
Yeah, so it's north of where the letter A is on that diagram.
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, I'm with you.
But it's not sure. Do you think we're sure it's great?
No, we get aggressive with A. We want to build it something that would essentially our standards.
Okay. If you want to show an example of the different grades would be, I've come down Robin Hood in a snowstorm once, and I'm sure anybody who's living up there would like to know exactly how steep it's going to be.
Okay.
The other point, and I know you said it's not going to have an impact, but just the thought you'd have all that traffic dumping directly into a problematic intersection of North Kelsey and Highway 2. We still haven't decided what changes we've got planned for it. That would tend, my opinion, to go towards avoiding that. And any of the others that go either to the roundabout or to Chain Lake Road, again, for other reasons, and allows the option of going either down North Kelsey or down Chain Lake to hit Highway 2 would make more sense to me, as opposed to just having this essentially a funnel down off the hill straight into... Those are my points. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen?
Thank you. Thank you for Councilmember Camp for bringing up the grade. That was actually going to be one of my questions, considering this morning's commute for many people. So just kind of what's the lesser of the evil given the options. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, yeah, option A tend to be the less steep of the grades.
Okay.
And I would definitely be interested in hearing or seeing some comparisons on the concepts too, just a little bit of a visual or something that this is comparable to Robin Hood, or this would be comparable to Chain Lake or something like that. In regards to the sections, you know, my opinion is whatever section we choose, I think it does have to have that that walkway and bicycle access, whichever way we go. And this makes sense for continued growth and vibrant, healthier living communities. So I know option D in the presentation is I have that option, but having that in it come up again.
Would you yield for I would have thought the same thing, but the pedestrian sidewalk going down where A is and continuing down to Galaxy Way, separate from the road where it curves at the bottom, were you going both, or maybe show both options, or
both for, and for there's the, if I understand the presentation correctly, there's standard section alternate section shown here for option A as option B. They're just keeping it straight road.
Correct.
So that being the lesser expensive and kind of keeping on some of the same gravel path. And I just want to be able to see what that's going to, that would be look like if we had that.
All the way down?
Street access, yeah.
Or just straight down?
No, all the way down.
Okay. Because I'd be interested in both.
Having the alternate section follow the complete road D alignment. And then the other option is have a trail just follow alignment A.
Councilmember Scarborough.
One consideration is in all the conversations about the steepness and the availability and Robin Hood. At least if you had the steepness, you can still come out Rainier View Road on a bad day. Come out the chain light. My other question is, where is this money coming from? Is this our money? Not state money, grant money?
It's, we're the drivers. It's coming out of our pockets unless we can find a funding source.
Councilor Scarborough, what we're trying to do right now is we're trying to get an idea of what the council and the community would like so that we have a number, and then off of that, whether it's REIT or looking for different kinds of grants and things like that, at that point in time, we've got a number and we can start planning for that. So that's the intent of the conversation. As I'm building a 2018 budget, I know that's a year from now, we want to be able to understand what council is looking for, start working in the construction and engineering and design, and try to figure out where grant opportunities might exist.
What drove the need to have any of it done other than coming out Rainier Road and down Kelsey and the Highway 2 and 522?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What drove the idea of doing any of it other than having coming out of Rainier View Road down Chain Lake Road and out Kelsey?
Well, we've had comments from people that live in the neighborhood that it would be valuable to have a second way in and out. You might recall that a number of years ago there was a fire right at the entrance at Rainier View. And because there was a fire there, there were people that lived in the back of Rainier View, like Trumbly, that weren't able to get home for a number of hours, and people that were in the back weren't able to get back out. If there had been an emergency at that time, it would have been difficult getting emergency vehicles in there while also taking care of the emergency at the entrance. So,
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for some reasons. And Councilmember Gamble used to live in that neighborhood. Councilmember Gamble, would you like to add?
Yeah, no, I mean, that was one of them. The other component of it is that that frontage road 7, when they put that neighborhood in, it was one of those contingent things. That's why they vacated that road, right?
Because they were going to
put the Rainier View Road in. They vacated that road,
right.
They put the Rainier View Road in, and then that frontage road 7C was to be paid for by the developer of that, what's it called now? What's the name of the development?
Sinclair?
Sinclair Heights. Yeah. And then when the downturn in the economy hit, everything went, it wasn't followed through on. And And it's been on our streets deal for 5 years now, 4 or 5 years. So I think that, we owe it to the people that live in there and to come up at least with a plan.
Okay. Thank you. Any further, Councilmember Scarborough?
No.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble?
That was it.
Oh, that was it?
Okay.
Great. All right. Does anybody else have any questions, any requests for the material that's going to be presented in a couple of weeks in a community meeting? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson.
Okay. Thank you. We'll have our open house on the 26th, and then we'll gather community feedback on it, hopefully, and then there'll probably be another presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, the next item that we have on the agenda this evening is under new business. This is AB 17005. This is ordinance 001-2017, amending MMC 18.88, commute trip reduction for first reading. And Mr. Falberg, I'm sorry, this would be Shannon. Sorry. I was thinking LID in my head.
Thank you.
You'll want to take the piece of paper off the front of the LCD projector.
We're high tech.
Good evening. I'm Shanna Restel, one of the planners with the city, and I'm here to talk to you tonight about required amendments to our existing commute trip reduction ordinance. You'll find that in Chapter 18.88 in the zoning code. And just giving you some quick background, the CTR law, so that's the very first set of CTR regulations issued by the state, requires major employers, so places with more than 100 full-time employees, to participate in this program. In Monroe, we actually have, we have four. The city of Monroe, the correctional complex, I'm using here, Canyon Creek Cabinet Company, and Natural Factors. So those are the businesses required to participate. Just to give you a quick history of this, in 1991, the original commute trip reduction law was passed, and it set the goals that you see above. It is the most broad set of regulations because it's the first. The second, the 1991 law was revised in 2006, and that's known as the CTR Efficiency Act. So after that, local jurisdictions revised their ordinances and updated them to match the new goals for trip protection. And then 2014, the state passed another CTR plan. And it set new statewide program goals and targets. So I'm here presenting the amendments to our current regulations under the requirements of the new state CTR plan. And to give you an idea of what this is for the city predominantly a paper exercise. We are amending the real impacts to the regulation. We're clarifying some of the language. We're adding a few definitions. It's not really a substantial change to what we have now. And additionally, we don't actually have to change the CTR plan because, as you can see here, the existing goal or the pre-state 2014 plan goal was that 40% use of transportation alternatives, an increase of that, by 2019. The new goal is 29%, so it's actually less. Number two shows that the reduction for vehicle miles traveled, single occupancy vehicles. We were looking for an 18% reduction before the new plan passed. We're still at 18%. And a reduction of the state's greenhouse gas emissions. Prior to the adoption of this plan, we were looking for an 18% daily greenhouse gas emission reduction. And the state now wants jurisdiction, or they want overall, the emissions to be at 1990 levels. So look, I went to the EPA site and did some research about what that would mean. In 1990, the levels were approximately, as you can see here, 6,500 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent. 2014, that's the most recent data I could find, that's up to 6,800. So if you're looking at, if you're comparing the two, we're looking to get the level down to 6,500, according to the current state law. And if you take an 18% reduction of the 6,800 metric tons that we had in 2014, you end up with about 5,500 metric tons. So in reality, what the state has now is less stringent than what it had. So because of these reasons, we don't actually have to update our plan. Nothing's effectively changing. But we do have to update the ordinance to match the language that Community Transit wants us to incorporate. This is a quick timeline. Everything's quick tonight, sorry. It's a timeline showing that we've met our notice requirements, and we had an open record hearing on November 28th. That followed one briefing with the Planning Commission, I believe on November 14th. And we're here tonight for the first reading. I have the wrong date on the anticipated second reading. It's actually January 7th. And just a quick overview for people attending the meeting. The Planning Commission on legislative actions such as these review them, they make a recommendation to council, and then in turn, council reviews the recommendation, decides whether to approve or whether to accept or reject the Planning Commission's recommendation. So the Planning Commission recommendation was to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law that you have an attachment to, and also to approve the proposed amendments that you'll find in attachment one, which is the actual ordinance. So upon receiving a recommendation, which you have in front of you, we're here tonight for the first reading, and you will take final action. The final decision is up to you. So next step, we schedule a second reading of Ordinance 001-2017, hopefully for January 17th, and you will make the final decision on the Planning Commission's recommendation at that second reading. Your decision, just for your knowledge, may be appealed to the Growth Management Hearing Board. And then, even though you're making a final decision, that's not the final stop for the ordinance. It still has to go to CMRC and to WashDOT DTR board. And this is staff's recommended motion. So we're accepting as first reading ordinance number 001-2017 and set the second reading of the ordinance for, it's supposed to be January 17th. I'm happy to take any questions you might have at this point.
Thank you. Councilmember Camp.
No questions, but thank you for the presentation. I'd like to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 001/2017, updating and clarifying the city's commute trip reduction regulations by amending Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 18.88, Commute Trip Reduction CTR, to ensure consistency with the state CTR plan 2015-2019 and applicable community transit goals and targets.
Second. So, first from Councilmember Camp, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action in Agenda Bill 15. Was it 17? Let's go with 17-005, correct? Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, the next item on the agenda is final action item, 17-007. This is ordinance number 002-2017, amending MMC Title 18 for first and for final reading.
Cue the music.
And
Kevin's got this one.
This one is being presented by Mr. Feilberg, who is not here this evening, and so Ms. Smoot will be doing the presentation for
Thank
Mr. Feilberg.
Mayor and Council, this is essentially a housekeeping ordinance related to ordinance number 022-2016 that was passed on December 6th. When we sent that particular ordinance to Code Publishing and they were reviewing it for final codification, they caught a couple of areas where things that we had amended, some tables, we did not amend the corresponding text. So in essence, what we're doing here is we're cleaning up what we did not quite hit in the first ordinance. The important thing to note on this is that in the agenda bill, it does go over that these code amendments included in the ordinance were presented to the Planning Commission, the public, and the City Council as removing minimum lot sizes while maintaining the per-acre lot yield for subdivisions. And when we did look at what Code Publishing brought forward to us, it was apparent that not enough of the previously existing text was removed as part of the code amendment, leading to the reduced per-acre lot yield that did go through the public process. Since the materials provided during the review and public process clearly show that the city's intent to maintain the lot yield was there, that this is just a housekeeping ordinance and that's all that is necessary to clarify the intent of the code amendment. For this reason, we're asking you to waive the first reading and adopt this on final reading. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Well, since this is 007, I figured I better make the motion. First, can you tell it's getting late? First, I move to waive council rules of procedure requiring two readings of ordinances.
Second. Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford to waive the council rules of procedure requiring two readings of ordinances, and a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp is not present for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Please let the record show that Councilmember Camp is back in chambers.
I move to adopt upon first and final reading ordinance number 002-2017, amending Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 18.10, Land Use Zoning District and District Requirements, Chapter 18.82, Site Plan Review, Chapter 18.84, Plan Residential Development, and ordinance number 022-2016, providing for adoption of low-impact development regulation amendments that were inadvertently omitted from ordinance number 022-2016, making other minor related and non-substantive code revisions, providing for servability, and establishing an effective date.
Second. I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Davis for the request in action B, as listed in Agenda Bill number 17-007. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you, everybody. All right, we're going to go on to the next item under final action. This is final action number 2, AB 17-008, appoint city council representatives to various positions, boards, committees, and forums. And is this Mr. Mosley by chance?
No, it's Elizabeth.
Oh, Ms. Smoot.
It's me again. This is our annual time to appoint different representatives to positions, boards, committees, and forums. As you see before you, there are requested actions A through G, assigning a mayor pro tem, French Creek Flood Control District Joint Board representative, representative to Snohomish County Tomorrow Steering Committee, two council members to review and sign bills, and also to assign members to the three city council committees. So may be recommended to discuss who might want to serve in those positions before moving forward with specific motions. And it has been noted that one of our council members is not here tonight, so if any of these items should be brought back next week, please let me know and we'll go ahead and do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to appoint Councilmember Gamble as mayor pro tem for 2017.
I have a first from Councilmember Hanford to appoint Councilmember Gamble as mayor pro tem for 2017. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing
here.
Councilmember Camp.
Here.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough.
I wanted to appoint Councilman Member Rasmussen as mayor pro tem.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor right now for Councilmember Gamble.
Actually, you don't need to have a second.
Oh, we did this last year, right? Okay. Okay, so there's a nomination for Councilmember Hanford. So going back to Councilmember Camp with the rules of procedure, since you recall this.
You should have multiple nominations. That's why we have to vote for it.
Okay, so there's a nomination for. Are you saying that there's a nomination for Councilmember Cutterback?
No, Rasmussen.
Oh, Rasmussen. Okay, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. The only question I would have is, sir, based on your job, and we missed quite a few last year. I didn't know if that was going to be. If not,
I didn't miss any more than anybody else. Probably less. The only is the last month I missed one.
Okay. You don't see this as an issue.
All right, so we've got a nomination for Councilmember Hanford, for Councilmember Gamble, another one for Councilmember Rasmussen. Gentlemen, I know that I would like
some sort of decision point. So how does that occur with two nominations?
Well, when it was
I see what you're saying.
Okay. When it was contentious with my appointment to...
I think we ended up doing a motion. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and do a vote. All those in favor of Councilmember Gamble, say aye.
Aye.
Put the hands up, please, for the ayes. Okay, 1, 2, 3 in favor. Okay. All in favor of Councilmember Rasmussen, say aye.
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 All right. We've got a 3-3, and I'm not going to break this tie. So does anybody want to vote again?
Sure.
All right. All in favor of Councilmember Gamble, say aye.
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 No, I'm not. I'm just... Okay, so 1, 2, 3 again. All right. And all in favor of... We're going to go to rocks here.
Rock, paper.
So we're back to 3-3. So...
I'll wait until next week.
Yeah, I'm not going to break the tie. This is somebody that represents the council. I don't feel it's something that is... time sensitive, and therefore we'll go ahead and wait till next week. All right. B, move to appoint a council member for the French Creek Flood Control District.
I'm current. I'll keep it.
Okay. So anybody have... Everybody okay with Councilmember Camp keeping it? Okay, by consensus, we'll go ahead and keep Councilmember Camp as the representative of the French Creek Flood Control District. How about for Snohomish County tomorrow steering committee?
I won't be able to do it this year.
You will not? Okay. Is there anybody that would like to do that, volunteer? Okay. Is there anybody that would like to nominate somebody? Okay. We'll go ahead and bring that back next week also. Wow. Okay, Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, Councilmember Cuttaback said to put her on any committee that we felt she needed to be on. So, something about not being here.
Okay,
out of her mouth. Those are the words. So.
Okay, all in favor of Councilmember Cuttaback serving on Snohomish County tomorrow steering committee, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, all opposed? Motion passes 6-0, or the decision is 6-0. Councilmember Cuttaback is listed on that, and we'll touch base with her to make certain that that works for her.
Yeah.
All right, for council members to review and sign bills, who'd like to do that? Okay, I see a hand from Councilmember Hanford and a hand from Councilmember Davis. Is everybody okay with Hanford and Davis both serving on that committee?
Aye.
I see nods. All right, we'll go ahead with that consensus.
Yes.
That'll be Councilmember Davis and Councilmember Hanford, sorry, will be reviewing and signing the bills. All right, now to Finance and Human Resources Committee. Council members, who are currently sitting on that committee? We have Councilmember Hanford, Councilmember Gamble,
Cuttaback,
and Councilmember Cuttaback are currently on that committee. Do you wish to continue on that committee?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we keep that committee the same? I see head nods. We'll keep it the same. Council members, are we going to do the same thing for the next two committees?
Do you want
to keep the same committees you had last year?
I do.
Yeah.
Okay, I see head nods. We will not change any committee assignments from last year, and we'll consider that.
Can I also just verify if you want to keep dates and times of the month, or if that's something you want to consider so that we can schedule them for either this month or next month?
Okay, so shall we have the first meetings in February?
February.
And we'll go ahead and keep the same dates and same times. We'll begin in February.
Nice and easy.
Yeah, nice and easy.
And the easiest.
All right, so the only things that we have left then are coming back for Mayor Pro Tem. I think that was it, right?
Okay. Well, that's SCT.
And
we only assigned it to Councilmember Cuttaback.
Yeah, you assigned it to Councilmember Cuttaback, but we will make certain that she's okay with that next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Now we're going to go on to the next item on the agenda, and this will be Councilmember reports. So, Community Transit Board of Directors, we don't have a report from Councilmember Cuttaback this evening. How about the Snohomish Health District Board of Health meeting? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Yes, all right. New budget for the health district. Printed version, not available on Amazon. If you want a copy, let me know. We'll get you a copy. It was actually a pretty quick meeting, just to give you a rundown on some of the easy items. We elected Councilmember Adrian Molinas as our chair and County Councilmember Stephanie Wright as our vice chair for the coming year. Current Chair Brian Sullivan outlined the three committees to the board and spoke kind of briefly of the duties, which I've discussed here. We confirmed two more positions on the Public Health Advisory Committee, which is great. We're looking for a couple others. Much of the conversation which pertains to, or which may or may not affect us, is you've heard me talk before about the health district looking to sell the Rucker building. The board went ahead and approved a resolution saying to move forward with the potential sale of the building, as well as encouraging cities to relinquish any ownership. And so I'll explain that here as clearly and briefly as I can. So back in 1990, the health district came to all the cities in Snohomish County, said, "Will you chip in, help us buy this building?" And cities said yes to a formal agreement, with the exception of Mukilteo, who ended up giving the money to pay for it anyway. Potentially, our portion that we contributed back in 1990 was about $24,000. That equates to, as far as ownership, which is kind of how it was presented back then, give us money, we give you ownership into this building. Our percentage of ownership into that building equates to 0.273%. So, council, keep in mind, I'm saying all this, and it's very hypothetical. In the respect of back then, apparently there weren't, it was a lot of discussion, kind of handshake type of agreements, but no actual formal agreements that health district's been able to find, as Gene mentioned last month, he was never able to find anything for here. So, apparently there's some sort of agreement that cities have had saying, yeah, we contribute this, we give you money for the building, help buy it. We want some ownership into it, but there's no actual documented agreement that anyone's been able to find saying we have ownership, or any city's had ownership into it. The Rucker building title only shows the health district on title, doesn't show any city entities, and so as far as we can tell, no other city entities are on title. And so what they're asking cities to do is relinquish any ownership that they feel they may or may not have. And so that's kind of where it's at right now. They're kind of making the rounds to the cities. They're actually coming here on June 30th as an open house to answer any questions and provide information, any information that they have. I'm planning on being there. It's represented the Monroe for the health district. They've put all the information on their website and sent out the emails to the community leaders, which I don't know that it went to the full council or not. But we can get that.
Yeah, the impression we sent it to the council, but
okay.
Huh?
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, because I think the number on there was like $24,000 for the city of Monroe.
Yes.
Hypothetical.
Yeah, hypothetical, exactly. So there's links to other documents on there, and I'd certainly encourage council members to peek through there, and if you have any questions, let us know so we can bring those to the open house directly to the health district ahead of time. But basically how it stands is we're being asked just to kind of, say, yeah, if there is an agreement out there, we're good, just letting you guys move forward, sell the building. The proceeds of the building would be used to purchase a new building within the Everett metro area, keep it kind of core-centered. Any excess funds that they get from the sale of the building and from the purchase of their new building, they would put those into a capital fund, so building repairs and so forth, improvements that they have going in the future. So that's really kind of the plan. In regards to the open house, Mayor, certainly anyone representing our city is welcome to attend. There's the form that we just need to get to the health district. But they are highly encouraging city staff, specifically mayors, city administrators, finance directors, anyone that would have knowledge within these agreements or have a financial knowledge say in it. So I'll leave that kind of up to you if, as far as asking city staff to attend those, I would just certainly recommend it, taking a look at that and considering it.
And it's January 30th.
January 30th. 2 to 4:30, I believe.
Sure.
Right here. So, let's see. So, does that make sense as much as I can? Okay. If not, let me know, please. Because I had to ask some, I think the same question 3 or 4 times before it finally came out that this is all in theory. You know, truthfully, we don't even know if these cities contributed this money back in 1990. No one has record of it, so that's just what the ILA said. So, other than that, it was a quick board meeting. We've got our executive committee coming up on Friday, which will continue with the Ruckelhaus assessment and continue on with the recruitment of city administrator and scheduled interviews for new health officer coming in the next 2 weeks, I believe. So,
recruiting city administrator.
I'm sorry, health district administrator.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for the health district? All right, let's go ahead and get down the line. Councilmember Gamble.
No report. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Happy New Year. And I went to the monument
dedication
on Saturday in 2004, is it about?
Yes, sir. It
was very well done, and it was really nice to see everybody. And know any of it.
That was really interesting.
No, that's probably what you don't know is that those birds were not, those were actually birds, they just froze there.
Watch out. As I mentioned, I still think the line that was, we were celebrating the birds in 20 degree temperatures, and the birds were celebrating in South America.
That's right. In their summer.
In their summer.
Anyway, that's it. Councilmember Davis. Thank you. Councilmember
Rasmussen. Yeah, just a couple things. Apologize for missing the sculpture dedication. I had a work commitment come up that I had to attend to, but read about and been down there. It is awesome. So glad to have it down there. And can't wait to see more. And, you know, kind of segues into, last week I had a leadership in Homish County class, and it was actually economic development. And, one of the speakers happened to be Mayor Barb Trowick of Arlington, who spoke about the Main Street program and the effects of having art within your downtown core, and the effects that it has, and how positive effects it has, bringing people down there, attracting different types of businesses, and just creating a whole different atmosphere. So it was actually kind of cool having that so timely and seeing what we're doing here. The other piece to that day, I actually got to tour a company called Select Plastics in Everett. And, the interesting thing about them, they do plastic parts for boats, and they've got a mold making part of the business, and then the part making part of the business, and they've actually had to outsource their mold making part of the business for the last several years because they've lost apprentice mold makers, and he was very up on the, there's a need and desire for higher education, but there's also a huge need for apprentice type of education, and really drove that home, and his need with the mold-making apprenticeships go right into that. And we asked the question as far as, you know, you got the mold makers, but then you also got the workforce that runs the machines and maintains them and so forth like that. And what are you doing with that? He is introducing us to his youth apprentice program that him and other manufacturers are starting to launch, and, you know, incorporates our community colleges, many of our high schools in the area, that kids as young as 16 can work in these manufacturing businesses, learning the hands-on skills while continuing the high school education, but then also earning college credits, so that by the time they graduate high school, they kind of have this three-way path of, you know, going to college for higher education, continuing in an apprentice program along those same lines, or just keep doing what they're doing. And, you know, it just gives the youth a lot more options and, you know, keeps our manufacturing businesses going with knowledgeable youth. So it was very interesting, and what he was saying, I was relating to here just because of, you know, we've got a lot of the manufacturers here in Monroe. We've got Everett Community College. We've got an amazing high school with technical programs. I mean, that type of program seems like a solid fit for something that would work in Monroe too. So I'm actually reaching out to him to talk more, get more information about it. Last thing, prior to the health board meeting, I had a great conversation with Councilmember Mark Allen from Mill Creek, who actually is on the works for Snohomish County Sheriffs. And Chief, he had nothing but great things to say about our police department. Says that made a point to pull me aside and say how awesome the department is to work with. He's actually assigned to the Sultan area and gets to work with our police department quite often. And it was just nice being able to unsolicited be pulled aside and say, hey, your police department over there is awesome. So, Chief, if you don't mind passing that along, and certainly my agreement, too.
Thank you very much, Councilmember Rasmussen. Councilmember Hanford.
I grew up with Mark Bond.
Oh.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. He's got less hair than you.
There you go. Let's see, I had to work on that Saturday on the Swift thing. I was bummed to miss that, but heard it was great. Saw all the pictures online. I attended the Councilmember Cutterback, the grand opening of the Housing Hope units right there next to Monroe Christian School. And Councilmember Camp was there. It was great to see. Toured the homes, met one of the families that built the home. Beautiful Hispanic couple with like six kids, ranging from like, I don't know, 8 to 25. And they all had pitched in and built that house for the last couple of years. So really, really encouraging to see. So.
Very nice. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Well, I too braved the weather, and I appreciate all the people who did brave the weather. Come down to the dedication, and everything's been said about it. I can't add, waste everybody's time, but it's good to have the art downtown. It's a good representation of the community. I don't really have anything else. I got a couple things, but it's your turn to talk. I want to ask about if you're speaking up this evening.
Thank you. Let's go out to staff, Mr. Worthen. Mr. Carroll.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We received today, I believe it's 60 signs that from the Snohomish Shelf District, the no smoking, no vaping signs. So our crew will be replacing the older faded signs in the parks and refreshing them with these new signs. So we appreciate that. Those signs were given to us free of charge from the Health District. I also was at the art dedication there Saturday, and it was just a wonderful event from my point of view. And I want to thank Mayor and Council for your vision and direction to with the ultimate result of that beautiful piece in our community. Mark your calendars, Sunday, January 29th is the 6th annual J.D. Bindle Memorial Run that will be in Discovery Park. And we had last Friday the first planning meeting of the year for the Tri-Monroe, which will be June 24th. That's all.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Farrell? Mr. Worthen, were you going to give an update on the positions that we're hiring for? I forgot.
I didn't hear you mention that. I'm happy to do that. I wasn't sure that was.
Can you just give a quick summary?
Sure. So I'll start from the top. Obviously, Dave's last day was Friday. I came back after the holiday on Tuesday and got that position up. Ready. It's being advertised all over Seattle Times, the normal places in AWC, and also the planning specific organizations that are in Washington State. We also have a senior planner position that was open, and that position has been filled, and the candidate will start the last full week in January, so not next week, but 2 weeks. I think it's the 23rd. I said the 23rd, she said the 30th, it's the 30th. So then we also have an associate planner position open that was approved as part of the 2017 budget. That position was open last week as well, and we're doing applications. So we are getting we have had some applications for community development director as well. Obviously, with an associate planner, you're going to get a few more because it's a more junior position, but we have had some people apply to the community development director position. First review on that is February 1st. So any questions at all? That's
a quick timeline. And we'll be getting in the accountant position and the park supervisor position vacancies out the notice.
Those are out as well. I was just speaking just for community development. The account is not out. The parks is out. Mike and I are reviewing resumes this week with the intentions of setting up interviews for next week or possibly the week after. With the accountant, we've had several conversations with Diane and also with Becky, who is here tonight. And we're going to leave that position until Becky can really get her hands around and see what the accounting work is. We're essentially going to have two accountants for a couple months. So once Diane leaves her home on the range, then we will start recruiting that position actively. It will give Becky a good idea of really knowing the lay of the land here before she starts to bring in somebody who has to train herself and train somebody else. So that's where we're at with the accountant.
And then we also have one position open that we're advertising for PD, an officer, correct?
That's correct. And I saw a gentleman over there in their suits today, so I assumed there was an interview panel over there. So, people
interviewing. So. The associate planner position is the code enforcement position. You recall we had a split code enforcement associate planner position. So, just letting everybody know that we're moving forward with hiring those positions and giving you that update. Any questions for Mr. Worthen? All right. Ms. Nelson?
Nothing tonight.
You're still smiling. It must be almost April. They appointed a replacement. Mr. Peterson?
I have none. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Brad's not here. Chief?
I have two things. First of all, I was all prepared for the consent agenda item that I thought somebody would pull reference to motorcycles. But what I would like to say is that we advertised bid process a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and we had one bidder on it. Last week, the state brought out their contracts for this particular motorcycle, and our bid was 13% less than what the state got on their bid, so I'm pretty happy about that. Second thing that we have an application for marijuana retailer, medical marijuana. The location is 41697 Chain Lake Road, Southeast. And it is in Area A, which I think that is the old Quiznos. This is the Forbidden Flower Company. Our plan is to address the issue similar to as we addressed the last one with a letter to the Cannabis Liquor Board, unless you have an objection.
And please note that I am aware that the council member individually received an email from an individual that takes exception to these uses here in town, and so I'm having staff follow up with that person as these business licenses come in. If you've got any questions about that, please let us know. But just like we did before, we'll bring forward after we get the analysis done, when Brad gets back on this new application, we'll bring that before council for your consideration to give direction as you did before. Okay. All right. Anything further, Chief? Councilmember Scarborough, did you have some questions?
Chief, some people have brought to my attention that they seem to be seeing more graffiti around, like the back of Albertsons, two or three, four places, freeway overpass coming into town. Are you having any reports of that to you?
No, I haven't had it. In fact,
does it take somebody making a report, and what does a report generate?
Well, what a report generates, we will go out and take a photo of it. We'll contact the owner of the property, tell them they have a requirement to remove it. And if we're able to identify the tagging, and quite often we can, we will try to address it with a criminal citation.
Okay. And I would like to make my desire known that I'd like to be more involved with the homeless issues around town. I got to ride with the officer that one day, and I would like to ride with him more. I'd like to talk about what we can do to pick up the garbage or have people pick up their garbage. Three or four of these presentations that we got on different routes up 191st and Chain Lake. One of them, almost at least two of them, go right through the homeless camp that's up there. Maybe that'll clean that part up, I'm not sure. But I have a couple of ideas I might want to follow up on. If I could do that with your department.
Chief, can you give the council just an update on where we are with a social worker? That was part of what we're working on. Both, you've got the enforcement part, but you've also got the what can we do to help people that are homeless. And you updated me earlier this evening about scheduling a meeting with the county.
Yes, on the 19th of January, we're meeting with the county to talk to them about what we desire as far as a part-time social worker for the city of Monroe, and we're going to ask them to draw up a contract similar to what they have with other other cities and also the county, and so that we can enter into a contract with them to provide this social worker for us. We expect that it would probably be a person that would be working in possibly by April, everything goes smoothly.
And just as a reminder on the graffiti, when there's graffiti, the reason why people do graffiti is so that it can be seen. If you've got a property owner that has graffiti on it, there is nothing that keeps that property owner from going out and painting it over. I had a property owner that had graffiti on their building. She reached out to me. She was unhappy. I reminded her that it's the broken window theory. The reason why people do things like that is to be seen. She went ahead and got paint. It was painted over by noon that day. She contacted me like at 7 a.m. in the morning. So while I know that we've got enforcement, we've got the ability to go out and give letters to people and things like that, it's still incumbent upon us as property owners, when there's graffiti, to report it, have somebody come out, take a picture of it, to document it, and then to paint it over. I know that's hard because we like the government to come in and sometimes step in and do things for us,
but it is our responsibility to paint it over. The longer it stays up, the more you put it on social media, the more the people that are doing it get exactly what they're looking for, which is more notoriety. So it might sound hard. Please paint it over. If you're in contact with somebody that's upset about paint on Albertsons or something, I would contact Albertsons. I'd contact PD, but I'd still contact Albertsons and ask them to paint it over. And it's the same thing with garbage on private property. When it's left behind by people that leave it behind, when you've got, you know, people on property like Albertsons or what have you, those property owners have the ability to trespass people and to go out and pick up the garbage. So we don't always need to rely on the government to do that, and we need to take care of it. Anyway, thank you. Anything further, Chief? All right. Anything further, Councilmember Scarborough? Great. Ms. Smoot, tonight.
Yeah, just a couple of things. I just wanted to note that we are still currently advertising for some openings on our boards and commissions. So just if you all want to look at that, I know that the mayor includes that in his Monroe this week. If you want to pass that along to any citizens that you meet that are interested in serving our community, those are open. There's four positions open, three on ethics, one on salary commission. And the other two things I wanted to note is that I have received a note from Councilmember Hanford that he'd like to attend the State of Everett address on January 18th, so I'm going to register him for that. So anyone else interested in that, please let me know. And same goes with the upcoming Snohomish County Cities Dinner on January 19th. Mayor Thomas has indicated he would like to attend that meeting. I did just send note of that, I believe, today, and they're electing officers, and there's a couple other items there. So please let me know if you're interested in either of those events so I can go ahead and register you. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any questions for Ms. Smoot? All right, let's come up to Mr. Mosley. Administrator's report.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. First of all, I'd like to apologize for the distraction I've had. I've given the council meeting all day today with my blowing of my nose and stuff. I've got, obviously, as you can tell, the crud that's going around. I just wanted to report that most of my activities over the last week have been in kind of orienting myself to the issues of the city. Met with staff individually on the issues that they're facing, met with community members as well, particularly the Downtown Monroe Association, to hear about their plans and impressive plans. I've also spent quite a bit of time talking with the members of the development community. There's some anxiety out there with the transitions that are going on, not just in the administrator office, but in the community development department as well. And so we wanted to meet with them to assure them that attention will be given. And this is an important time for the development community because they're trying to get their permits through so that they're able to go when the weather turns nice. So I've spent quite a bit of time on that as well and have additional meetings on that tomorrow. So with that, that's all I have there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Mosley? Mr. Mosley has stepped right in. I really appreciate you confirming his appointment for this interim position. He's got a lot of depth and breadth of knowledge, and I do appreciate the work you've been doing in just this last week. I've been able to throw a number of things his way, diverse topics, and he's been able to respond and to meet with people, and I really appreciate that. So thank you, Mr. Mosley. All right. To me, just a real quick summary. You can take a look at Monroe this week. One of the things I'd like to, you'll notice that there's a new format. Pam Baker put together a new format. Pam, if you get to listen to the recording, thank you. You'll note our revenues, how they closed for last year, how they came out for last year, year to date on December 31st. Please take a note, we're just over $400,000 above where we were from 2015 for sales tax revenues. You can see real estate excise tax was up fairly high. And one of the...
Yeah, so you can flip through there. Oh, the new house permits were up 133%, so up 80 units, up to from 60 to 140 units. Staff continues to be very busy with the work that continues to come in, and a big thank you to staff. Please hand that to other staff members, directors, and chief. We really appreciate all the work they're doing. I also attended the Swift dedication, and thank you to all the staff that were there and that helped make that happen. I really appreciate that. It looks great. And for this coming week, remember, we do have the Blueberry and Kelsey Community Open House on Thursday at what time? 5 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
And again, it's an open house format, so you can come in and just, you know, wander around and look at phone boards and things. And it is going to be at the
library.
At the library. Okay. So I encourage council members to come down. It is noticed as a public meeting, but again, it's an opportunity to kind of mill around with people and learn about what the project is. And we did that once with the downtown and ended up with a different downtown. Yeah, there you go. So anyway, some other things too, just as a to remind you, we have a couple things in the budget for downtown. We've got lights that are going to go up over the sidewalks. We've got staff working on that. We've also got the DMA, the $25,000 to help them with hiring an individual to do work for staff. So all of those things we've started moving on from the budget, just letting you know that things keep going. All right. Does anybody have any questions for me? All right, let's go back to the extended agenda and the agenda for next week.
Yes, thank you. A couple items of note. We will have a discussion on term limits and potential amendments to our term limit ordinance. There'll also be a new business item on the Rucker Building, which Councilmember Rasmussen briefed us on, and also consideration of the Marbella Water System petition, as well as authorizing the mayor to sign an amendment. So those are the items we currently have on for the 17th.
Councilmember Kent?
Did we have an addition? Did you like
to the economic... I'm sorry, what's that?
Yes.
Oh.
But yes.
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You and I discussed an addition.
Yes. We're going to talk about that a little bit later this week. We may have an addition, which is the economic development.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
But, all right.
Yeah. What we want to do is have a conversation with you and Councilmember Hanford.
No worries. That's fine.
Okay. So if it's not this coming week, it'll be in the next couple of weeks. Yes, sir. All right. So we'll put that down as tentative for sometime between the 17th of January and the beginning of February.
Yep.
Okay. All right, anything further? All right, extended agenda? I'm sorry, Councilmember Gamble.
You know, it occurs to me that we are reviewing our official newspaper for the city of Monroe here. We kind of put that on hold.
It's on an upcoming agenda.
It is?
It should be. We've been talking about it at the staff level. Identifying the official paper, is that in the extended agenda?
It will be.
We do not have that noted on the extended agenda, but it is on our team meetings to actually address that in the first quarter of this year.
Yeah, so that'll be coming forward in the next three or four meetings.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Is that doable? Three to four meetings? Okay, two thumbs up. All right. So that will be added to the agenda, selecting a newspaper, the official newspaper for the city. All right.
Anything further?
Anything further, Council? All right. We do have need for an executive session this evening. The executive session is... the executive session is for collective bargaining, pursuant to RCW 42.30.140, subsection 4, subsection A. I see it listed as 15 minutes on the agenda. We're going to go ahead and start with 10 minutes. So we are now in executive session. Please note that there may be action to follow. If nothing else, we adjourn the meeting. Thank you. We're on exec session. Okay, we're out of executive session.
Okay, we're out of executive session.
Councilmember Hanford.
I move to adjourn.
Second. Okay, I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember, is that Gamble or Camp?
Sure.
Hanford.
Gamble.
Gamble.
All those in favor of the motion to adjourn, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any discussion? Sorry, none. Okay, motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.